Have you ever wondered what is watching you in the dark?
Join us as we dive into the world of the oddly macabre.
We hope you like small, dark spaces.
Hey everybody, it's us again, Kara, Tila, and Bria, and welcome to our mini macabre.
All right.
We're going to talk about guardian angels.
Ooh.
Except for not really.
Oh.
So there is a confirmed diagnosis, like a psychiatric diagnosis. It's called the third man factor. Have you guys ever heard of this, or the third man syndrome?
No, I have never heard of such things. Do tell.
There shall be telling.
Okay. Yes.
This was first, not confirmed, but it was first like vocalized by T.S. Eliot. So I hope you guys know who that is, because if not, like, you need to read more. So he's a popular poet, blah, blah, blah. So in one of his poems, he actually documented who is the third who walks beside you. When I count, there are only you and I together. But when I look ahead up the white road, there's always another walking beside you, gliding wrapped in brown mantle, hooded. I do not know whether a man or a woman, but who is that on the other side of you?
That's kind of creepy.
So it's like that footprints in the sand.
Yeah, kind of.
Everybody had on their wall in the 90s.
Oh,
or
my
whatever.
God.
Early 2000s.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Kind of that. But there's actually something to it.
That's super weird.
So I'm going to tell you a story about Ernest Shackleton. He was a famous explorer. He explored the Atlantic. He, you know, sailed ships over there, conquered all sorts of stuff. His last expedition, December 1911, he leaves to go to the to Antarctica, planning to like traverse Antarctica to get from sea to sea to just be the first to do it. So his ship is called the Endurance. They get up there and it gets trapped in the ice. They go, bad time of year. As the ship is trapped in the ice, it slowly starts being crushed. The crew decides they're going to pack up and they're getting off the ship. They take three lifeboats with them and they start just dragging them across the Antarctic. So they're trying to like camp and figure life out. There's not a lot of rations. There's not a lot of hunting. And so they decide that they're going to get into these boats and they are going to go about 720 nautical miles, which is about 830 miles, to this island that has a known whaling station on it. So they're like, fuck it, we're going to risk it. Let's go.
Risk it for the biscuit.
Risk it for the biscuit. So they do, and they make it to the island. However, during their course, they were actually blown off course and arrived on the other side of the island from the whaling station.
Ruh-roh.
He decided that he was going to take two of his men and they were going to walk or climb across this island, which actually had like some mountains and things like that. But they were going to take three of them because the other men were going to stay there trying to establish camp. But if they all went, they were all going to die. Like, they just made this decision. So him and these two other men cross over this island trying to get to this whaling station. And as they're walking and they're climbing these mountains and they're just going through fucking hell, Shackleton just, he's got this guy with him that's talking to him and just encouraging him. And he's even giving him like life survival skills. Hey, do this, go this direction. And eventually the three men make it to the whaling station, except all three men were 100% convinced there was a fourth person with them.
That gives me the heebies.
Yeah.
They walked this entire time. And as they talked afterwards, all three men were able to account for the look, the height, the size, the facial hair. All three men saw the exact same person.
Yeesh.
But that person never existed.
Hmm.
Three men left. Three men showed up to the whaling camp. That fourth man didn't exist. Yeah, all three of them saw.
That's kind of wild.
Yeah, I don't like that.
Not a ghost? Ghost.
Not a ghost. That's one of the most well-documented experience of third man syndrome. There is another one about a British explorer, Frank Smith, who he almost became the first man to summit Mount Everest in 1933. Didn't quite make it. He was about 1,000 feet from the summit. So he's climbing up the mountain. He's got all of his peoples with him, his Sherpas, whatever. So they get to a point where there's a storm coming in. The weather's a little too rough and everyone else turns back and he's like, fuck this shit. Like, I'm right here. I'm going up. And one of his companions stayed with him and he went all the way up. Like I said, he didn't quite make it to the top, but he got about 1,000 feet. He thought he was up there, whatever. So, you know, as he's climbing up with his companion, like he's offering him food, they're having full on conversations. His companion's like guiding him and leading him and directing him. He gets all the way to the top and he turns and he looks at his friend and he goes, wow, we made it. And his friend nodded and smiled and then disappeared. And he's like, well, I mean, maybe he fell down the fucking side of the mountain. He doesn't know. Like, he's just kind of a little disoriented at this point. And he's just like, well, okay. Maybe he turned around and decided to go back a little bit. Like, he's just not really 100% sure where his friend just went. So he goes back to down the mountain, gets to base camp, and he's like, hey, yeah, like, did so-and-so get back? He had a name for him. I can't remember what it was. Did so-and-so come back? And they're like, what are you talking about? He's like, yeah, there was another climber with me. And they're like, no, there wasn't. We left you alone.
What?
He's like, no. I legitimately had someone with me and they're like, no, you fucking didn't.
Oh, geez.
That's wild.
So for the last couple thousand feet of the climb, he had a person with him in his mind. And he, to the day he died, swore that there was physically another person with him on that mountain. There was not.
So is this just like people's way, like brain's way of, I don't know.
Maybe. We'll get into that in just a second. Mm-mm. So science actually does think that this is something that happens for people to get through like extreme situations.
All the stressy depressies.
Yeah. So science is kind of like, hey, you know, this is how the human mind copes with isolation, being terrified, being in extreme environments. However, that's not 100% true because I've got a list of people who have said that this has happened to them. T. Lawrence, who was, he's basically called Lawrence of Arabia. He was the British Army officer. While he was leading forces against the Ottoman Empire,
Ayo.
He describes hearing a voice that would encourage him, give him strategic ideas, kind of like lead him. But he never saw a person. He describes it not as a voice in your head. You know, when you think to yourself, hear your own voice talking.
Yeah.
No, like it was like a physical voice talking to him. But he never saw an actual person.
It's kind of wild.
Yeah.
Same thing with George S. Patton.
Patton?
Yeah. What is he? Old Ironsides? Is that what they called him?
Something like that.
Yeah, I don't know.
I can't remember. But yeah, Patton. He recalls hearing a voice talk to him during some of his most stressful times. That would give him guidance and inspiration and kind of like push him forward when he doubted himself. Now everyone's thinking like, yeah, that's the little voice in your head. No, like it was a real voice. Someone was talking to him.
Mm. Ooh, it's a ghost.
I know. Well, I hope it's a ghost.
Like, I wonder if this kind of plays into the same sort of thing that people who have near-death experiences.
A lot of these people weren't in near-death experiences. Neil Armstrong, he says the same thing.
I mean, it might not be the same, you know, experience itself, but I wonder if it activates like the same like portion of your brain that's just like, beep.
It might. They do say it happens a lot with like grief. You'll walk into a room and be like, oh, so-and-so was just in here. Things like that. I think that's a little bit more, not far-fetched, but a little bit more common. But to have like an experience where somebody's physically with you, that's different. And when you have an experience where it's just not you, but it's two other people that see the same thing, talk to the same thing, experience the same thing, like that's fucking creepy.
Yeah.
All right. I got two more for you. and then we can talk about the psychological. So James Sevenge, he and his friend Richard Whitmire, they were climbing a mountain in the Canadian Rockies. So they were roped together. They were going through like a gully or something like that, and an avalanche came down and covered them both. So Richard actually could have gotten away from the avalanche, but he was tied to James, who got caught completely in the avalanche. James actually woke up and his back was broken. He had broken ribs. His scapula was broken. His arm. He had torn ligaments in both knees. He had internal and external wounds. Like, he was fucked up. Sorry, James was like that. He's looking around and he's like, what the fuck? He's still tied to Richard. And he finds Richard, who's his friend, is dead. So he's like, well, fuck this shit. So he basically kind of just lays down to like die by his friend. Like, he can't walk. He can barely crawl. Like, he's fucked up. So he's like, well, fuck this shit. And he lays down to die by his friend. And another hiker approaches him and was like, hey, man, like, you got to get up. Like, base camp's X miles away. Like, let's do this. Like, you can drink this. You can eat this. So this person literally talks James into crawling basically back to base camp. He doesn't quite make it. And he gets to a point where he's just exhausted. He literally physically cannot make it any farther. And his friend, like this other hiker, looks at him and goes, you're going to be okay. Someone's coming for you. And he passes out.
Ew.
Not even an hour later, another group of skiers found him and called 911. That other hiker was never found, didn't exist. But he spent hours with this person, crawling through the snow, making it back to base camp.
That's kind of wild.
Yeah.
One more story. So Don, I don't know how to say this last name, DeFrancesco, Don. So he worked in the Trade Center during the September 11th attack. So he was on the 84th floor when the first plane hit the other tower. And he's like, wow, this is fucked up. But I mean, I'm going to be safe because, I mean, what's the chances of a second motherfucking plane hitting? Well, it did. So him and his colleagues, they rush downstairs and they get caught in this fire escape. And they can't go back up because of the fire. But there's such a people crush that they can't go down. And he's frantic. But then he remembers a man grabbing his hand and saying, come with me. And he wove him through the tangle of people all the way to escape the building. He is the last known person to leave the second tower, period. And he to this day swears someone led him down those stairs. Someone took his hand and said, come with me. He absolutely 100% stands by that to this day. There's four examples of not just like voices talking to you, but physical apparitions. A lot of people say, you know, it's supernatural, like divine intervention. Maybe it's your guardian angel. Science also can explain it with hallucinations of overstressed brains. One says that it's like cognitive processing, where you process something in a way that you can understand it, because it's such an extreme situation that the brain can't process reality. So it makes an alternate reality to process what's happening, which I kind of feel like anybody who's ever had trauma in their life, that's pretty accurate.
Yeah, that seems pretty accurate to me. Psychologists
say that it's like a coping mechanism for humankind. But at the same time, like, it's pretty fucking specific. So I don't know. What do you guys think?
I don't know. Because, I mean, there's a lot of history in guardian angels as well.
Mm-hmm.
And people who generally it's like some sort of religious fanatic or something like that, or, you know, it's tied to God or whatever. But there is a lot of talk about guardian angels. So who knows?
Yeah.
I mean, I generally lean to the science route and would say it's your brain, like some sort of like defense mechanism. However, the ones where it's like multiple people, how do you explain that?
But at the same time, you've got
mass hallucinations.
Yeah. Those happen a lot, even to larger groups.
Well, and the powers of suggestion is pretty tense, but I don't know.
Especially immediately after a traumatic experience.
Right.
When they're all talking and everything.
You also have to remember, none of these are current. The first one happened in 1933. actually, the first one happened in like, what did I say, in like 1915 or something like that. So these are not current. These are not like, I saw it on TikTok and suddenly there's a person living in my house. Like, it's nothing like that. Like, these experiences happened so long ago, and they happened over, you know, 100 years. But they've always been consistent that there was someone there and they were convinced that person existed.
It's hard for me to, I don't know, maybe it's just because my belief system, I don't believe in angels. But at the same time, when you're dying or near death, DMT gets released into your system. And that's like a psychosomatic drug. Yeah, something like that. I don't remember what it is, but it's like in hallucinogens. So you're hallucinating. And some of the most common things that come from that are out-of-body experiences, like floating above your body, the tunnel of light, and talking to sentient beings,
right,
or angels. So it's like one of those things where the more I learn about the brain, the more I'm like, we fucking know nothing about how the shit works in our head.
Well, and I get the whole like near-death experience thing. Like, I get that. But this isn't near, like, this is near death. Like, these people are like on the extreme edge, but they're not like being guided towards the light or comforted. They're being told to survive.
But I feel like it's just like the flip side of acceptance.
They're being shown pathways, how to get back to help.
Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of things that are in our subconscious that we don't have forward thinking of, but already know the information. That stuff just gets come to the surface when you're trying to survive. Your brain goes into survival mode. You have that fight response. And if that fight response is being heightened by a chemical released into your brain and everything's kind of merging together, then it seems like you're getting out of body or help from a sentient being, when really your subconscious thought and your forethought are being combined into one experience, and it's just being brought forth.
That's the one thing that, like, yes to all of that, but it's an experience that's coming together as, I don't know, a hallucination of a person. Like, that's where it's kind of our materialization of a person. There we go.
Yeah. Well, I mean, hallucinations are pretty fucking real.
Oh, that's true.
To a lot of people.
That's true.
I mean, look at schizophrenics.
Yeah.
These people are not people they know. They can't pinpoint this person. However, okay, so if you're talking about like schizophrenics or things like that, like, normally if you're having these hallucinations, it's a family member, it's somebody you know, it's somebody you can relate to.
Not all the time.
These people are talking about complete strangers.
So your brain actually, well, I actually don't know this for scientific fact, but what I have heard, so third hand, you know, second hand information.
TikTok. Swear to God, if this is off of TikTok.
No, this is not off of TikTok. But your brain doesn't create new faces. So when you dream about strangers or you hallucinate strangers, it can extract faces from things you've seen, like people on the street or people that you come in contact but don't know on a regular basis, or people that you watch on TV that share similar looks, you know what I mean, with whatever you're hallucinating about. Mm-hmm. So it's one of those things where it's like they may seem like a stranger because they don't know somebody, but the faces feel familiar in a sense, because they've seen them before. And that's where your brain is bringing that information forward. Mm. So I don't know.
Yes.
I would be interested to know these people's belief systems.
I would too.
If they all are a Christian based, or they all in some way, shape, or form believe in a God, angels, or an afterlife.
Of these people thought that it was supernatural.
Right. But if they believe in God and angels, then that's not a supernatural thought.
All four people that I just told you about have written books about it, have documented their experiences. Not a single one of them ever considered it a religious experience. Mm-hmm. They truly believe that there was another person there physically with them.
I don't know.
None of them have called it a guardian angel. None of them called it a religious experience. All four of those individuals, especially the one with the other two guys who saw the same thing, none of them, all four that I just said to you, were men of science, explorers, I doubt that somebody sailed into the Antarctic going, God's going to get me.
It would be interesting, though, because you have unconscious bias.
Well, you know, and I mean,
you know, because if you're raised a certain way. Well, yeah, way,
between 1711 and 1923.
Everybody was Christian. There's a pretty good chance.
Yeah. I mean, three of them were English and one of them was American. So probably Christian.
Yeah, or subconscious bias still plays a role.
But that's the thing, is that nobody can be unbiased. You will be biased, period.
Yeah, everybody's biased.
Because of the way you were raised. Good, bad, indifferent, right, left, pink, purple, it doesn't matter. The way you were raised is how your bias is going to present itself.
Exactly.
So, granted, these probably were all a bunch of Christian people. However, the fact that they were science-based minded, and not a single one of them ever said, oh, God was looking out for me.
Yeah.
No. They said, hey, this random person on the mountain was looking out for me. Not God.
Yeah.
It was some dude in a fucking poncho.
Some dude
in a poncho.
I find that interesting is that none of them ever attributed being saved by God. And they never wavered from their story.
Well, yeah, but when you truly believe in something, whether it's true or not.
Yeah, which is fine. But to not waver after 30 years, to not waver thinking, well, maybe God saved me, or maybe it was a guardian angel, or maybe I hallucinated it. You know, to be so convinced and confident in your experience to be able to talk about it 30 years later and never waver from your story, there's something to that.
Aliens.
Fucking aliens. Goddamn fucking UFOs.
It's aliens.
This is always one of those topics that's just like, it's so hard to actually discuss because of that bias. So it's like, I mean, we have no idea. Like,
it's true.
You know, what the experience was or what they actually saw or how they actually felt about it. But I bet if you were to go on throwing out TikTok and hashtag guardian angel, I'm sure there'd be hundreds of stories about how somebody came to their rescue. Like, I mean, growing up, I heard a million stories about like, oh, I was doing a thing and, you know,
the spirit
told me to turn around. And
yeah,
so those voices and those, I guess, visions are all over the place, but who's to say that they weren't real to them?
Yeah.
Or who's to say they're not real in general?
But then if you validate that kind of stuff, who's to say that Joseph Smith wasn't talking to somebody in a hat?
I guess to each their own.
Well, I mean, you know, you look at religion and people who have claimed being visited by angels and all sorts of that kind of thing. There are a lot of accounts. We could go over thousands and thousands of them. Yeah. But I think it's, you know, it's what you believe to be true or not true. I mean, that's the whole basis of religion is faith, right?
Right.
So it kind of also questions, like, what is reality? Like, is your reality where your brain is super stressed and so it conjures somebody to help you, or is
reality is an illusion?
Yeah. Like,
yeah. Like I say every episode, we're living in a simulation.
Reality is relative.
And that person was just late for clocking in. And so they sent somebody to go get them.
Right. Fucking A. Anyways, that was my little mind fuck for today. I've been thinking about it all day and it pissed me off.
I like it.
I liked it. Yeah, that was a good one.
It was.
It tickled my brain and made it hurt a little bit. And
it did.
Now I'll probably go on my own little deep dive of what?
Angelies.
Yeah, thanks for that one, Kara.
Yeah, you're welcome. Yeah. Good luck with that fucking mind twist.
And just always remember to follow us on the socials.
Always.
Always at Oddly Macabre.
All right.
Boom.
Okay, guys. Love you guys.
Love you guys.
Love you.
Okay,
bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye. All right, love you guys.